Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
This brief life on Earth is a school to which we eagerly come because spiritual growth can be much more rapid here. Or it's a gym with each challenge of our lives meant to target and strengthen a specific set of our spiritual muscles. And it turns out that the most difficult challenges of all can help us to make the most remarkable spiritual growth. Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes, and my guest this week is Donna Vasaki. Her story, which she tells in a little book called I'll Meet You at the Base of the Mountain, is the most extraordinary, beautiful, and uplifting take on spiritual growth resulting from a planned tragedy that I have ever read. I love this book. I could tell you the story myself because that's how involved I got in it, but I think we should hear it instead from Donna. So welcome, Donna.
Thank you, Roberta. It's nice to be here.
What happened to Donna is the worst nightmare any of us have. Donna, what started you on this journey?
Well, in 2003, my daughter, Christy, was killed in a car accident. She was 21 years old. Wow. It changed my life. It obviously, you know, it was devastating and really, you know, set me on a course of the grief and denial and all of that. And the beginning of my book is a lot of that. It's a lot of what I was feeling and going through and everything at the time. So it was very raw and very emotional.
But let's go back to the moment before you heard the doorbell ring. Donna has been married 1 year longer than I've been married to a really, really lovely man. And you could tell he's lovely from his book. They've been married for 44 years. She had four children, textbook family, two girls, two boys. They're all starting off beautifully on their own. There is nobody, I don't know anybody myself, more blessed than Donna was the moment before the doorbell rang. And then she sees the thing we all dread to see. She sees police on her doorstep with a chaplain.
5:30 in the morning, you know, the doorbell rings and wakes us up, you know, and look out the window and I see police cars parked outside. And then I open the door and, you know, there's these two police officers and a man with a chaplain badge on. And I yelled to my husband. I let him stand on the porch. I wasn't, you know, and I yelled to my husband. I said, Bob,
put on your pants. Yes.
Yeah. Put some pants on.
Like a good wife. Yes.
You know, I didn't want him to come to the door in his boxer shorts and have that as a part of this memory, you know, because I knew it was a memory you're never going to forget. But it changed our life. And our, you know, our daughter was killed. She lived in Denver, which was about an hour away. And she was killed in a car accident the night before.
Now, she was a beautiful child. We don't have time to talk about indigo children, but I agree with you, Donna. She seems to have been one. This is a group of people who were born, I guess, from around 1990 for people over a 20 to 25 year period who are extraordinarily more spiritual than the rest of us are. It's not surprising to me that this is a gift that she would have wanted to give because they're a very giving group of people. But this is an area where I think maybe we'll have to talk
yes.
about the indigos, because I know very little about them, but I have met some, and you really can tell that they are in this unique group of people.
Well, they're warriors. You know, they came here to kind of break down some of the things that we, you know, see as sacred and believe about how the world runs in that. And Christy was that. She was very outspoken and really adamant about how things operated in that. And that's what indigos are. They were warriors. They are warriors.
But what's remarkable about this book is how honest it is. It covers a 10-year period, not looking backward from the end of it, but as it was lived. and some of it is really unbearably raw. The first reaction Donna had was that she was not going to play this game. I am not a mother, a bereaved mother. I'm not in this group. I will not sign up. And she actually, there was a time when she thought that stepping in front of a car might be a good way out. A very painful denial period to read about. And then you found, was it Compassionate Friends, or who was it that you found?
Compassionate Friends, it's an organization for parents who've lost children. And I didn't want to go. This person kept badgering me. Her mother was organizer of the group, and she kind of kept badgering me, and other people would tell me I needed to go. And it's like, I don't want to go. And this girl said, I'll be there. I'll go with you. And then she calls me like an hour before and said, my kid's sick, I can't go, but you go and my mom will be there. And I remember driving up to the location and sitting in the car smoking cigarettes. I'm chain smoking in the car for like an hour and I didn't want to get out. I saw this other woman kind of doing the same thing, parked across the street, and she finally got out of her car. And so then I got out of my car and we walked in together, and she said, I lost a son. And I said, I lost my daughter. And we walked in holding hands. Yeah. It's the kind of meeting, I mean, it's a horrible place to be, because you're sitting in this big circle with all these other parents who've lost their children. But it's also the kind of place where you can share and say the kinds of things like, I almost stepped in front of a bus today because I didn't want to live. It's an amazing place to be, and it's very compassionate and wonderful. But I have to say, my life was changed at that meeting again, and not by the group of people that were there, but by one woman. And she came up to me afterwards and said, your daughter was standing behind you all night long, and she's a beautiful girl.
Isn't that wonderful?
She hands me her card, and it says Angel Reader, and it's like, I don't know what this is.
Right.
I don't know anything about
because
this.
Because you didn't want anything to do with this woo-woo stuff in the beginning.
Well, I didn't know anything about it. It wasn't part of my radar.
Yes.
You know? You're so desperate to connect and get answers, you know, from your loved one, that you'll do anything. It took me like a month to get up the courage to go see her. But when I did, I was able to connect with Christy and get some of my questions answered and just know that she was okay, that she was still there. It's amazing.
I think that part of what I think is beautiful about your book is watching you slowly open to the possibility. Now, I think you always sort of believed she must have survived, but that she could come back into your life and be vibrant. When did you first understand how closely you could be connected to your daughter?
I think it took a while. You know, first I started reading all the How to Talk to Dead People books by, like, Sylvia Brown and
right.
James von Prague. And then I read, you know, Connecting with Your Angels, Doreen Virtue. And then Conversations with God jumped off the shelf at me. And it just, you know, I'd spend hours at Barnes & Noble just with a pile of books in front of me, reading stuff and that. But I didn't know any of this before. It just wasn't part of my circle of awareness. But then I went for a couple readings with psychic mediums, but it took me a while to get to a place where I felt like, you know, I could actually feel her and know she was there.
And she told you something you didn't believe at first.
She did. She, at that very first reading, she said, we agreed to do this.
Yeah.
And it had more to do with my soul's evolution than Christie's. And I'm going, what the hell was I thinking? You
right.
know, it's like,
right.
why?
Right.
Why would I agree to this?
Right. This is something which every mother in your situation says. One of the two books that I've published this fall is Flying High in Spirit, A Young Snowboarder's Account of His Ride Through Heaven. And he actually was living in Fort Collins, Colorado at the time of his death. He was going to CSU. And he died at the age of 20. And he told his mother that this is something they planned in detail. And she said to me, I never would have signed up for that.
Yeah.
How could he say? Initially, she would have no part of it.
And that's was my thought too at the beginning and that, but you know, it's been 12 years later and you look back on the course of your life and the different paths you've taken and the things you've done and experienced and what you know now, I can see that it changed who I was and who I am today and what I've done.
One of the things that she said all early on was, I'll meet you at the base of the mountain. And that became the title of your book, which incidentally is available on Amazon, right?
Yes, it is.
And I urge, I mean, I'm sure it couldn't cost much. It's a quick read. You don't stop. Once you start it, you don't stop reading it. And it's just, I think, life-changing because it's so perfectly, it's so raw, but at the same time, so uplifting. And it perfectly describes exactly the transition that we all, I think, take when our particular lesson is based in a terrible grief. This is not easy, folks. Nobody said this was going to be easy. But I think what Donna shows very triumphantly is that it is the most powerful possible lesson you could take. Nothing else would have transformed your life other than Christie's gift, right?
Exactly. Exactly. It was funny how I had met a woman who was a psychic medium about a year after Christie died, and we sort of hit it off, and she lives in close to Detroit. And she after she went back home, she emailed me and she said, Christie came to see me. And she said, she'll meet you at the base of the mountain.
Yes.
And she goes on to describe this big lush green mountain and this water running through it and everything. And I said, Kimmy, I don't know where that is. And then she came to Fort Collins a year later and she was doing gallery readings, you know, for people in the audience. And she said, Donna, I think Christie's here and she has a message for you. And she said, I'll meet you at the base of the mountain. And she goes on to describe this big lush green mountain and the exact same message she gave me the first time.
Wow.
And I said, Kimmy, you gave me that message a year ago and I still don't know where the mountain is. But I feel like I spent 10 years searching for this mountain,
looking for
Christie.
And we were with you. I mean, you were at Machu Picchu. You were at a Buddhist, whatever they're called.
Shambhala Temple.
Yes.
I was in Maui. I've been in, you know, Vancouver and Seattle. And I live in Colorado. We have lots of mountains here.
You have a few. Right.
I spent 10 years searching for Christie, searching for that mountain. Where am I going to find you?
And I was trying not to read ahead because I really wanted to know how that – I knew you had to make that mountain story come out.
And you don't tell them where the mountain is. They have to buy the book.
No, we're going to talk about it because I think it's part of the beauty of your book. Mm-hmm. But we're not going to talk about it just yet. Tell us more about how you started to feel. When you got past wanting to walk in front of a bus and you started – she said, I'll meet you at the base of a mountain, and you sort of knew she was alive. Then you started to have experiences with her, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I started. Well, she would send us signs and messages, some of the typical ones, you know, like butterflies and play with electronics and different things like that, that we just knew it was Christie. I would have a psychic reading every once in a while, and they would tell me interesting things that, you know, Christie was there at Christmas time when you toasted her and stuff like that. And but, you know, you just start to learn how to connect. It took me a long time. And I relied on other people in the beginning, like psychic mediums. I relied on my grandchildren. They're the most amazing teachers of all.
Those stories were remarkable because I got grandchildren. And actually, my grandchildren, when they were very young, they did – I'm convinced they were in contact with some recently dead family members. But it was nothing as dramatic as yours. They were younger, for one thing.
Yeah. Well, my son's little boy, Nick, was 6 years old when Christie died. And so his Aunt Christie was his buddy. And she would just show up in his room. And he could see her. Hi, Nick. How you doing?
Oh.
You know, and often. You know, she would be around him often, and he would talk about her. And his little brother was just a baby when Christy died, but she would come to him when he started to walk and talk and everything, too. She'd show up in his room and play with him and that.
Wow.
But I remember my grandson, Nick, he was 9, so this is still 3 years later, and he would walk home from school, and he'd be home alone for about an hour until my son got home, his dad. And I asked him one time, I said, "Have you seen Christy lately?" And he said, "She sits on the couch with me after school until my dad gets home."
Oh, that's so beautiful.
Yeah. And like I said, he sees her.
Yes.
And later on that year, my husband and I are driving him home from somewhere. And I asked him again, "Have you seen Christy lately? Does she still sit with you after school?" And he says, "Yeah." He says, "But sometimes I think I see her at school. And sometimes when I'm having trouble with my math, she'll whisper the answer in my ear. She'll go, 25.
She's cheating in school even."
Well, that's but wonderful. We laughed and we said, "You are in big trouble, because Christy sucked at math."
Oh no, so, that was the wrong answer. Oh, that is
but
funny.
They, you know, and my daughter Jennifer had a little girl. She was born about a year after Christy died, and Christy's always with her. She sees Christy, she's just always had her around, and so you know they were constantly giving me positive feedback that this is real, and they don't have any doubts that, you know, right, it's just normal for them.
Right.
They see Christy now more than they ever did when she was alive, because she's just there.
What tell me how your other children took this, though. She was the baby, and she was obviously a much loved child in the family. How did this affect your other children?
You know, they handled it really, really well. I think they honored her, they loved her, they keep her memory. It was my son Jason who decided right after she died. He said, "We have to do a golf tournament. We have to do a memorial golf tournament in her honor, and we can give the proceeds to some, you know, organization or something." And so it was Jason and Adam, my two sons, they were in their 20s, who started this memorial golf tournament. And they've been doing it ever since, along with my husband. And that.
And Donna didn't want to do it, I recall reading.
No, I didn't, you know. I didn't like doing an event for my dead daughter. You know, it just kind of ticked me off. But and over the years, we've created a foundation, the Christy Vasaki Memorial Foundation, and we've given over $500,000 out for scholarships
for
women. And last year, we built a house for Habitat for Humanity. And,
wow, that's beautiful.
But it was my boys who said, "We need to do this." It was their way of dealing with their grief and honoring their sister.
Well, that's certainly a very productive and positive way to deal with it. Were they feeling her presence or hearing from her as well?
Not so much. My boys are a little bit male, and they, you know, they really don't want to go there. But you know, they would see, especially my son with the one with the two little boys. He would, you know, recognize little signs and things like, "Oh yeah, Christy was here. She's messing with us," you know, because she would always do something, you know, to kind of tease them or whatever. And so he would sort of recognize it. But they're not real open to recognizing that she's around. But their kids, they're very open when it comes to, you know, the kids, because they don't squash that at all, which is nice.
So golfers must really love to do your tournaments, because was that all from golfers, $500,000?
Well, we did. We also had a big party. It was called Christy's Big Night Out, and it had a big silent auction. And
dinner, okay, you know, that helps a little.
Like
still,
that.
I'm impressed that you were able to raise that kind of money. Good for
you. We get like 300 golfers every year, and that's a lot. You know, in one tournament, we have 300 golfers, so it's a big tournament, and it's the biggest one in the whole Front Range of Colorado.
But it seems also to have been something very good for your husband, a way to focus his grief, which otherwise he was right. he was trying to be strong about, but obviously he was as bereaved as you were.
Right. And it really has been helpful for him. I mean, it keeps him going in that. I kind of went into the spiritual arena and looking into the unknown and all of that. And he struggles with that. But this gave him focus. So it was perfect.
We're just going to pause for a second, and then we're going to find out what, I mean, frankly, you floored me when I started to read about some of the things you did to learn, my goodness. This is Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. My nonfiction books are The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, Liberating Jesus, and Flying High in Spirit, a young snowboarder's account of his ride through heaven. And you can learn about all my books and find my blog at robertagrimes.com. Our guest today is the beautiful and amazing Donna Vasaki. Donna experienced the worst tragedy anybody can imagine, which is the unexpected loss of a child. And she turned that tragedy into such triumph that, frankly, it thrills me even to think about it. I've just loved her book. Okay, Donna, please tell everybody what you did. This boggles my mind. You became the major guru of running major events. Have you had the courage to do this?
Well, you know, when I start discovering things, I want everybody to learn this. Oh, this is so cool. Such, you know, everybody should know this. And in Fort Collins, we're about an hour north of Denver, but none of the speakers, you know, Deepak Chopra, Wayne Dyer, any of these amazing new thought spiritual speakers never came to Colorado, especially to Fort Collins. And
sure.
And I'm reading all these books and learning all this stuff. It's like, I want to see these people. I want to meet them. I want to learn from them in person. I was the executive director of the Fort Collins Symphony at the time. And I've always done events, you know, I was the little neighborhood kid who put on the neighborhood circus, you know, and things like that. So I decided, well, I'm going to bring somebody in. I brought in Sonia Choquette as my first speaker, and we had 500 people there. And it
That's
told
amazing,
me that
really?
other people were searching for answers too and wanted more of this information. And so I created
the How large a place is Fort Collins? How many citizens, people?
Well, we're about 120, 30,000 and maybe more now, maybe 150.
Yeah, that's bigger than I thought, but still, that's very impressive.
Yes.
For a little city in Colorado, for you to get that kind of attendance.
Well,
wow.
And then it just grew from there. I started my business, Bella Spark Productions. Bella means beautiful in Italian, and Christy was a beautiful spark. So I named it after her. And I know it was inspired by her. It took me a while to tune into that, and then this was the name, and it was perfect. And so I quit my day job as with the symphony and went out on my own.
How did your husband feel about that? I think I'm going to go from earning money, dear, to spending money. Fair enough.
Yeah, it was. It was interesting, but I was on a mission, and there was no stopping me.
And I love that.
And then we bought a magazine. And changed the name to Bella Spark, and I've had that for 7-8 years now. And again, it's all spirituality, holistic health, new thought, and it's all about planting seeds and igniting change.
Let's give people the websites and how they could get the magazine, and we'll say it again at the end of our conversation. But what's the website for Bella Spark?
It's Bella Spark, Bella Spark, SPARK.com. And there's a link to Bella Spark magazine and the events that we have on. But I started bringing in people. I started doing a speaker series. Well, I had been with the symphony. We did concert series. So
sure.
I did a speaker series and was able to work with all these amazing teachers. We brought in Wayne Dyer. We had 2,400 people there.
Oh, my goodness.
To see Wayne Dyer. And 1,800 people to see Deepak Chopra, only because it was in a smaller arena and we sold out.
Wait, where were these events being held? Do you had places like this in Fort Collins?
Yes, we had the Budweiser Event Center for Wayne Dyer.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah.
So you said to your husband, dear, I'm going to commit to the Budweiser Event Center. Where's the checkbook?
Yeah. I started my business with a empty credit card with a high limit.
Oh, my.
And, you know, used that. That was my cash flow and everything. And it was, I, you know, I did this for many years. And then I went to Seattle. I decided, my sister lives in Seattle, so I decided to do some events there. And then ended up in Vancouver and St. Louis. I did events in Detroit. And but it was fascinating because I worked with the people that I wanted to learn from. And so I had this wonderful journey of over the 10 years of working with these amazing, amazing visionaries and learning from them. One of the first people I brought in was Neil Donald Walsh, because that was one of the first books I read, you know?
Yes. Wow. And you were never nervous while you were doing all of this?
Oh, I was nervous all the time.
Okay. Well, you're very brave, dear. My goodness. I think it's pretty clear when you read the book that you wrote that you were being led and driven, sort of a combination of the two. And you were coming to know your guides as well. How did you begin to know those who were helping you?
How did I begin?
Because I noticed all of a sudden reading it that you're like buds with all these angels and guys.
It just kind of came in gradually. I was reading books and it talks about how you can connect with your guides and angels and you can even ask them, well, what's your name? And so I felt like there was this one guide around me all the time, but he always made me happy. He just made me smile whenever I could feel him. And so I says, well, what's your name? And he said, David. And then one time, you know, sometimes you just have weird things, especially in those kind of weird, you know, hours between morning and still night, you know.
Sure.
That's, and one time I saw him. And he looks just like Lyle Lovett, but he makes me smile. And I was riding my bike one day.
You saw him. All right, people are listening and saying, what? And I'm saying, what, as well, because
I see him in my mind's eye.
But I've been trying to do that with my own guide, and I have not seen him. I have seen Mikey, who now is one of my guides as well. He's guiding both his mother and me, but I have not seen it with my main guide, Thomas. I can't see him.
I don't always see, and it's just kind of sometimes, you know, it's in my head. But my grandkids, I said, what does it look like for them? Because they see them.
Yes.
And they said they said it's like looking at you or me, except they have like a dark shadow around them. And
so they're seeing your guide standing in the room?
Well, I was, my grandson, my youngest grandson, his name is Drew. And he would see angels all the time.
Really?
And I remember he stayed overnight. He was like 10 or 11 at the time. And he stayed overnight. And I was trying to get him to go to sleep. So I'm laying in bed with him and trying to get him to settle down. So we're talking about our angels and stories and things like that. And I said, and I asked him, I said, so you see angels and that? He says, all the time. And he tells me about his angels. And I said, well, can you see my angel? Because I know I have this one angel. But I've never actually seen him myself. And I said to Drew, I said, can you see my angel? And he lifts his head up and he looks way up towards the ceiling and he says, whoa, he's tall.
He's tall.
I actually have this giant blue angel.
His blue? Is his skin blue or just his clothing?
No, he's blue. He's just kind of a shade of blue.
Well.
But Drew could see him. I mean, it was so funny because he just raises his head and he looks up at the ceiling and he goes, whoa, he's tall.
Oh, wow.
And but he talks to me, you know, and I can feel him, you know, when he comes in. I started to get like buzzing. These were one of the first signs. My head would buzz, you know, like in a certain spot, like my top of my head or different parts of my crown on my head. It would like just buzz and vibrate. And I'm like scratching my head because it was driving me crazy. And that's when I kind of knew that, okay, something's coming in. Sometimes people will hear like a high-pitched tone in your ear.
Yeah.
Those are our guides and angels trying to talk to us.
Let's just emphasize those, Donna. You talked about a buzzing feeling kind of in your head, and also about a tone in your ear. Tell us just very briefly what those were like, because people listening need to know that these are in fact reported to be signs that your guides are in communication with you.
Yeah. Well, if you pay attention, I think that's the biggest thing, is to start paying attention when you feel these different sensations or experience these different things. And so now when I hear, you can just hear like this little high-pitched tone, sometimes, and then I kind of stop and go, okay, all right, what's trying to, who's trying to connect with me in that? And the biggest problem with connecting to our guides and angels, to our loved ones, is that they're vibrating at a higher frequency.
That's right.
Than us. And somehow we have to close the gap. So we have to raise our frequency. They lower theirs. And when it's not a match, that's when you start, hearing the little tones, and that, or the, like I said, this buzzing, at the top of my head or something.
Very fascinating. Now, people are saying, how can she do this? I could never do it. And I'm one of those people, because I've been working in this field since God was very, very young, and I don't have nearly the abilities you have to contact spirit. So I think you have some natural abilities, but you also worked hard at it. You started to do meditation, right?
Right, and I'm still not very good at meditating, and that it's not my strong suit. But breathing, there's so many different breathing practices you can do, or counting your breaths, or saying om. I think I've tried them all, and that just to try get the biggest thing is to get the little monkey mind to stop talking in your head, because once you don't have this constant little I gotta go do the dishes tonight, or I gotta remember to do this at work tomorrow, and all the thoughts that keep coming in and out of your head, if you can slow those down. And that's what the meditating helps you do, is to, especially the breathing in that, and it helps you to quiet that. And once you get quiet, that's when you can connect. And the other piece I started to do was to write. I learned this from a friend of mine, and you can ask questions. So, who's with me? What guides are with me? And then just write whatever comes. You're a writer. You know this. You do this.
Oh, I didn't know I was doing it until very recently,
right,
but it turns out just about everything I've ever written was channeled. I'm still trying to get my head around that.
Yeah, but I just start, simple writing, and then it's fascinating, because when you're afterwards, if you go back and look at it, I keep little notebooks, and I would write regularly when I would meditate. And you look at it and you realize that it's not you who's talking when you're writing. And the hard, sometimes it's hard to, because you feel like it's just the voice in your head and not, not somebody else coming in, but just your voice, because that's what you hear most of the time. It's your voice in your head. But I think as you get better at this, when you start to recognize when the messages come in, that they're different. They're saying things in a way that you wouldn't say.
You wouldn't say them.
Right.
Yeah. But so that you really feel that you're doing the meditation and that you're being open to it. I mean, you really wanted this to happen. You were not letting your doubts get in the way. You really feel that made a big difference in your being able to do this?
It did. It made a big difference. And like I said, I worked with a lot of people, and I spent like a whole year producing events for Joe Dispenza. And he has amazing meditation. So he was really good at training you to really connect, be able to connect. And that's the key. But it's really not that hard, and I think it's getting easier and easier. The veils are getting thinner.
Isn't that amazing? It's so true. Yeah, this is something which we've talked about before. I've talked with guests about before, but I think it's really strikingly obvious in Donna's life and in her life, the life of her family, that the veil between this level of reality and most of reality where what we used to think of where dead people live, is becoming very much thinner. It's Donna, over the last 20 years, I'd say certainly over the last 10, it's become very, very noticeable for those of us who've been paying attention. Don't you find that? Isn't it striking?
I think it's amazing, and it does get easier and easier to connect or to tune in. One of the things that I've learned, too, and a lot of this from scientists and people like Joe Dispenza and Bruce Lipton and that, is that there's this field of energy around us, and everything's in that field of energy.
Yes.
And it's like a radio frequency, like an FM radio frequency, and you just have to tune the dial.
Yeah, isn't that wonderful? Wow.
Whatever it is you want to connect to, whether you're asking for the answer to a problem, whether you want to talk to, you know, a loved one who's passed on, or a guide or an angel, you just have to tune your frequency more than anything else and ask them to come in, and it's all there. And it's getting easier and easier for anybody to do.
But now several people are saying, what about her grief? She lost her child, and now she's doing all of these things. Weren't you still feeling bad? People are wondering.
I am still feeling bad. I still feel bad. But it's one of the things that I found is that, you know, when you first lose somebody you love, or you have this terrible thing that happens to you, you're in this horrible pit, and your life just, you know, goes along at this deep, deep space. But then you start climbing out a little bit, and then you can even go for a little ways where you feel almost normal again, and then you drop. You know, I look at it like a graph, you know, with up and down arrows, you know.
Yes.
And but the times when you can be, you know, feel almost okay, get a little further, a little longer, and then you have these drops, you know, and it's the least you could be going along 5 years and you feel like, I think I've made it, I think I'm okay.
Yeah.
And then something hits you and all of a sudden it's like you're right back to the very day one.
Yes,
but you don't stay there as long, and then you come back up.
Yes.
You know, so the deep parts get further and further apart, and the kind of even keel parts get, you know, better and longer and wider and that. And it just, you know, 10, 12 years ago when somebody said, you will survive this, I didn't think I would.
No.
And I have to tell you, it was maybe only a year ago, maybe a little bit longer that I remember doing an event with Greg Braden, and Greg was talking about the whole 2012 shift and how excited it was to see all of the things that are going to happen and take place on the planet as we move into this new phase of where we're going. And he said, I want to live, you know, till I'm 100 some years old, because I don't want to miss this. And I remember thinking, there's no way.
No.
I don't want to live that long. I don't want to stay here without my daughter.
Yeah,
but I remember.
I don't want to stay here anyway. I mean, that's sort of how I feel.
But it was about a little over a year ago. I remember the realization that I said, "I want to live.
Oh,
I want to live. I'm ready to stay. I'm okay." But it took me 10 years to get to that space where I could say, "I want to live."
What about your husband? How is he doing?
Good. He's I think he has a harder time, because he hasn't opened up to this reality as much to really understand that Christy is with us, you know, that she's
never experienced her personally.
Well, he has actually. He has actually seen her.
Well, then, for Pete's sake, Bob.
But he, you know, he's kind of like that Catholic schoolboy, and
yes.
It's like, this is what he's just in that box.
Yes.
This is what I was taught. This is what I know. And he's so afraid to step out of that box and be open. But then, you know, there's little glimpses of it, and every once in a while, you know, he tests the water. I think it's been harder for him.
Yeah, I think that religions do make it much harder for us to deal with our own grief or our own impending death. It shouldn't be that way, but they instill in us sort of a core fear. which is the reason I ended up having to stop being a Christian. And I loved being a Christian, but it made me too scared. When I dropped the religion, I dropped the fear. And my husband, one of the many things you and I turn out to have in common is I'm also married many years to a Catholic who, when I started doing this work, he was sure I had not just lost my mind, but probably lost my soul.
Yes.
And he's come a pretty far in that time, and I'm very grateful for that. But it is difficult for people, especially people raised either Catholic or fundamentalist Baptist,
right,
to think an inch beyond what was indoctrinated into them as children. And that's too bad.
It is.
When you come out of that into God's love and the perfection of what reality actually is, eternal reality, where we are one with God, that makes you so happy.
Right. And to know that, you know, your soul lives on, so
yes,
that this is just a little blip,
yes,
in the whole journey of our soul that goes on and on and on and on and on.
Yes.
This is just a tiny piece of it. And psychics who have, you know, talked to dead people all the time, they always say that it's like just a moment in time.
Yes.
We feel like this is a long, long life. And
from there, it looks like no time at all because they don't have the same kind of time there,
right,
that we have here. So now, do you believe that when Christy first told you that you and she had planned this for your soul growth, do you believe that now?
I do. I fully believe that. I would not have learned what I've know now. I would not have touched the people that I've touched. And,
yes.
And I feel like, you know, this was part of what I was supposed to do. Part of my journey was to, you know, share this message with other people and help plant the seeds and ignite the change for this shift that we're going through and the new earth that we're walking into. It wouldn't have happened. I mean, I think I would have been the same person I always was. And not that I was a bad person, but I'm totally a different person and I'm more open. And I think I'm a kinder, nicer person and less judgmental.
It does make you a nicer person. That's one of the things.
Yeah.
Anyone who knew me before would say the same thing. You wouldn't have wanted to know me before.
Yeah. Well, one of the books, you know, one of the best books anybody wants to read is Don Miguel Ruiz, The Four Agreements. It's such a simple book, Four Agreements, and it was just so profound for me to live your life in that way. And he's an amazing man. He's an amazing man. You asked me about things that would happen or how I get stuff. I remember I brought Don Miguel in to do an event in Fort Collins, and he came in a day early. And it's like, well, why? I don't know what to do with him. You know, he wasn't supposed to speak until the next day or whatever. And we had this whole day to play. So I took him for a drive. It was in the fall and it was beautiful fall out here. And I took him for a drive up into the foothills, into the mountains. And there, I see a sign, Shambhala Mountain Center, which I'd been to before, but I hadn't even thought of it. And we said, well, let's go there because he'd never been there. Shambhala Mountain Center is in the foothills outside of Fort Collins. It's this amazing Buddhist stupa coming out of the wilderness, just rising out, this incredible stupa.
And no, so explain a stupa. It sort of looks like a top of a bullet, right?
Yes, it's tall and long and skinny, and it's a temple, and it's got all this gold stuff, and you walk inside, and here's this giant gold Buddha. And you can meditate there. The whole land is holy. It's very special energy in that space. But we went there, Miguel and I, and a couple other people I had with us. And I went inside the stupa, and they have little kneelers there, and so you can meditate. And I sit down, and the voice in my head says, thank you for bringing him here. It's time for him to merge his energy with ours. And what I saw was, and he carries that Toltec lineage, that Toltec energy. That's his lineage.
Wow.
And this stupa, it's in Colorado, but this, you know, it carries this Buddhist, amazing Buddhist energy. And I saw, like, I had this vision of like these little sparkles of light, like the globe with little pockets of light here and there and around the planet. And how they were like all connecting. little by little, they were, you know, connecting and little more lights and little lights and things like that. And that's the message I got was, thank you for bringing him here.
Wow.
And it was fascinating because, like I said, it wasn't planned. I didn't know that we were going to go there. I asked his assistant why they came in a day early. And she says, well, we tried to book for like Friday, but we couldn't, nothing would work. Oh. So we had to come in on Thursday.
It was supposed to happen.
Yeah, and
So was he different after this merging happened?
No, because he just is. He just carries that energy. He's one of the most amazing men I've ever met. He's so present with you. When you are with him, you are with him, and that's who he focuses on, and that's who he talks to.
Yeah,
and he's not thinking about anything else, and he gives the most amazing hugs.
That's a plus. That's a really big plus.
But you get, you know, it's like all of a sudden it just kind of came in. And it always blows my mind when I get something so clear and so vivid and that. And I know I didn't say that. I didn't know anything about connecting his energy.
Wow.
So
you have met so many of the big name people in the New Age and spirituality movement over the past decade.
Mm-hmm.
And you've been able to pick their minds mm-hmm. and learn from each of them and gather it all into yourself. So in the end, I think you came to see that you were doing this, although you've helped so many people, you also were really doing it for yourself, right?
Yeah, I wrote one of the later chapters in my book, so it was all about me.
Yeah.
You know, you think you're helping the world and bringing light and you know, this wonderful message to the world, but really it's all about your soul growth. But what I've also learned is that and this is what my guides tell me, and this applies to everybody. They say, as you go, so goes the planet.
That's right.
As each and every one of us open up and raise our vibration and step into that higher self, it raises the vibration of the entire planet, and it ripples out exponentially.
This is why my guide tells me, my primary guide tells me, this is why Jesus is now restating his gospel teachings, because the gospel teachings are a very good, simple way for people to raise their vibrations and transform the world. If each person were living according to those very simple teachings, the world would be utterly transformed. And having now spent a lot of time studying the Gospels and trying to live them, I could say I think that's probably right. There are many paths, I think. But the problem is, for Westerners, some of the others seem too complex, too strange, where we're too busy. I don't want to learn to meditate. That's me. I don't really want to learn to meditate at all. Mm-hmm. But none of those practices that are foreign to, perhaps to Westerners, have to be adopted if we just read the Gospels we've had in our hands our whole lives long. That's all we need to do.
Right.
And that's what you're doing. You are giving people a choice of all these different ways. Each one will be spoken to probably by a different tradition in a different way. So that's why what you've done in bringing in all these different people is so, so important. What a beautiful thing.
Well, it was a wonderful journey and amazing people, and I've learned so much over the years, and it did change my life. And I am a different person today than I was 10, 12 years ago.
Where are you going now? Have you thought about
it? I don't know.
You don't know?
I feel like I'm on the cusp of something new, but I'm not quite sure where it is. And I have to tell you, I'm working on a project. I'm a project manager at an Episcopal church, which sort of blows me away. It's like, why am I here in
for
this space? Because I sort of walked away from traditional religion too.
Yeah.
And what I'm finding is that there's so many pieces about religion that have the same message. Once you get past all of the little in-the-box doctrine, and this was always my feeling about Jesus, his bottom line message is all about love. Most religions, their bottom line, if you drill through all of the stuff, man-made layer upon layer of stuff. The right. bottom line is love. It's
There's
all
one
love.
Truth. You're absolutely right. What a profound thing to say.
Yeah.
The
so,
one truth is love.
So, yeah. And so here I am at this church, and these people are amazing, and I see some of the things that they're doing, which they have like a prayer where you go in and you just sit in, they call it contemplation. Well, they don't call it meditation, but basically that's what it is.
That's
it's
it
like
is, right?
contemplation, you know, and then prayer. And so it's the same thing. And so I'm learning, you know, about this and trying to, you know, juggle all of that in my head and bridge all of that. And again, as you go, so goes the planet. So
right.
as we make these bridges between the new version of what and kind of weeding through all of the old doctrine of the traditional churches and drilling down to that, it's all the same. The message is all the same.
Well, that's a beautiful summary of everything that you've learned. I'm so sorry we're coming to the end of our time, but I want people to buy your book. Tell us again what the book is. It's available on Amazon, right?
It is. It's called I'll Meet You at the Base of the Mountain by Donna Vasaki.
And there is a profound meaning to that, which I'm going to let you buy the book and read. I agree with you, Donna. I think it's worth discovering. I don't want to share something that is really
yeah.
profound to discover for yourself. I'll Meet You at the Base of the Mountain. And there's also bellaspark.com. Is it .com?
Yes, bellaspark.com, and we have a magazine, wonderful magazine that's available online, or if you like, if you're like me and you like soaking in the bathtub with something, you know, you can order a subscription. There's so much wonderful information out there. We just want to share with everybody, and plant some seeds and give people a chance to open up.
Well, I think you've done a remarkable job. Christy is thrilled with you, I'm sure, dear, because you have aced a very tough lesson, and you continue to do it. I'm so glad to have met you, and we're going to stay friends.
Yes, we are.
Meanwhile, I've got to say, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. You are a powerful, eternal being. You never began, you never will end. And when you fully grasp what that really means, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. If you'd like to learn more of the amazing things we're learning about our one reality, you know that past episodes of Seek Reality are available on webtalkradio.net, and farther back episodes are available for free, of course, on iTunes. Just look for Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Again, I've got 4 nonfiction books, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, Liberating Jesus, and Flying High in Spirit. You'll find details about all my books and my blog at robertagrimes.com. Next week, we're going to be talking with J.D. Messenger, who's a friend of Donna's. I just love this. His 2012 book, 11 Days in May, was a quirky and really unforgettable bestseller. You're going to love this book, but it sold majorly when it came out. And I think you're going to love the man as well. So please join us next week. This week, we've been talking with a truly remarkable spiritual voyager. Not a course she chose, but a course she has aced, Donna Vasaki. Now, dear friends, I know your mind recoils when I say that the most horrible experiences of your life might well have been and probably were something you planned. But the evidence is overwhelming that we eagerly plan some of the worst experiences you can imagine into the brief illusory time that we spend in physical bodies, because that is the best way for us to grow spiritually, and when we are in the afterlife, we crave spiritual growth. It's why bad things happen to good people. It's really very simple. Our guest this week is the most beautiful example I can recall of someone who has used a grievous, grievous earth lesson to attain the greatest possible spiritual growth. She has done a beautiful job with it. Her name is Donna Vasaki. Her book is I'll Meet You at the Base of the Mountain, and I urge you to read it because it's just going to take you a little while, and I promise you will not put it down. Please educate yourself enough that when any bad thing happens in your life, you'll begin to see these things as the opportunities for spiritual growth that you and your guides planned them to be. And you'll make those that you maybe love and lose as proud, I know, as Christy is of Donna. For now, though, please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being. You are infinitely loved.
You've been listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Roberta blogs and answers questions at robertagrimes.com. Join us every week as we explore what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about the one reality we all share. Knowing the truth changes everything.